You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer, IndyCornrows.com. And joining me on the other line, the man of too many titles, West Indianapolis Community News own Pacer writer, Tony East. Tony, how mad are you at Miles Turner on a scale of 1 to 10?
One, the lowest number.
Well, I'm at like a 6 right now, 6 to 7.
My expectations for him are so much different than everyone else's. So it's always going to be 1 for me. It just is. He plays the same game every game, and people just get outraged when they lose. I'm out of arguments.
All right, so let's just get right into it. Miles Turner on what, Tuesday or Monday, signed a 4-year, $72 million extension.
A week ago, but yeah,
last Tuesday. This is whatever, people know what I meant. signed this extension, and it was like he's going to be with Indiana for a while. He wrote that Player Tribune thing, like every player does, and he's going to have a good year. He's been working out on all this stuff, and then he comes out and basically is the same player he was last season, which is disappointing. I know he's been good defensively, but he has been just frustrating on offense. He is shooting 20-foot two-point shots, which are ridiculous. He's not shooting nearly enough threes. He's not shooting nearly enough threes for a guy who can stretch the floor. And at some point, teams are basically daring him to shoot the three. And at some point, if he can't convert them, if he stops becoming a stretch big like he wants to be or he should be, because that's the only way he can stay on the court. His backup Sabonis looks better than almost in every game. He gets in foul trouble every 5 seconds, it feels like. Turner just seems like he just plateaued after a second season. And I don't know why they gave him a 4-year. So much money. So stupid. He's never going to be 20. He can't even score 20 points in a game because he can't get enough good shots. Like, it's ridiculous.
So a lot of that's role. He only shoots like 12 at most times a game. I think 12 is his most shots in a game this year. Is that right? Bucks, he shot 12.
I think 13 against the Bucks.
Bucks, he shot 12. Nets, he shot 7. And Grizzlies, he shot 8. In this game just now, he shot 13. So tonight Tonight was 13. It's going to be hard to score 20 only shooting 13 times. And given his role, it's a lot of play finishing, not play creating, you know, in the sense he's not going to get a lot of free throw attempts anyway, because he's not really in the post anyway. So as a play finisher who's more outside the paint, it is going to be hard for him to get to 20 points and only 13 shots just the way he plays. But I agree with you about the frustrations about the 20-footers. And I struggle with this. I've talked about this on Twitter before, of the balance of who do I blame for this? You know, is this all Turner just being too lazy to pop behind the line, or is some of this on McMillan?
It's on an ability to realize his space. It's spatial awareness, humidity.
Well, how much of it is on Nate McMillan to not drill in his head, like, get your feet behind that arc right now?
You don't think he is? You don't think he is? I bet he is.
I don't know.
Every time Turner did a 20-foot shot, they should circle it the day next day and just yell at him about it.
I know. It's so bad. And it's in every game. That has been easily the biggest problem with him. I have no beef with people complaining about that, because that shot is awful. He takes 3 or 4 of them every game, and I wish that would stop. And it's so easy. It's one step behind the line. Like, it's one step back. Even if you shoot the same percentage, you score 2 or 3 more points right off the top every game.
Yeah, because he probably goes 1 for 3 on those shots. So if he shoots a 3, it's an extra point a game for the team every time.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree. I'm with you there. I hate – So the challenge with him is that his role is so different than the other bigs who play. And, you know, I have no problem with the way Nate uses the bench bigs, because playing through them makes a lot of sense with the limited creation they have with that group. But it does make comparing the guys really hard, and it makes Turner look so much worse when the guys in the second unit are just playing out of their minds because they're being maximized in their role, and they look so much better than him, you know. And with the starters, they all look pretty good too. So it is hard to say when it shakes that way, and it has been doing that every game so far. But I don't think Turner's been bad. It's just the way that he uses the other bigs makes them look so much better than him.
I also think the way Sabonis has played, I know he was hurt and he didn't have a great night against Minnesota, but his first two games is a sign of, like, maybe he should be starting over Turner. Like, it's a sort of like Turner is fine. His contract kind of become stupidly overpaid, but just the drop-off from him to Sabonis is not very far, and you could easily turn Turner for an asset, which is kind of, I think, what I've done through 4 games is this team is still one player away, the same way they're one player away under Paul George. They have Oladipo, and they need somebody else. And, you know, for a while they wouldn't trade Turner because it was like he was their future, and they wouldn't trade it, like, when Paul George was here the first year, trade him for some kind of usable asset. That was Caleb Cooper was big on that. when I first started Red Recorder, she was huge on that. So I just, I don't know. It just, it seems like he kind of is just like, he is what he is, which is a fine player, but not for his contract. And it seems like you could get rid of him and place a bonus and you'd be actually better off.
Yeah, and you can't trade Turner for a year because he just signed the extension, which is bad.
We can next summer.
It's not bad. I'm sorry. It's not bad. I don't want to trade him. I'm just like, given the animosity.
Can you not trade him after December, or is it a full year?
No, it's a full year. He's effectively a no trade clause for a year.
All right, that's fine.
The animosity is very awkward though. But I don't think they should trade him anyway. But yeah, it's only four games, so we're clearly overreacting. Well, maybe not overreacting. We're clearly prematurely large with our reactions.
Well, here's how I'll put it: is by four games last year, we had saw Vic as like we knew he's taking a step. We saw bubbling, but we didn't know he'd taken the step yet. But he came out, and he started killing it, and Turner has not shown any of that in the first four games. Like at least the past two seasons, he came out the first game and always put up 20. I think he put 25-1 and 20 in last year. And he just didn't do that this year. He just came out and looked the same as he did last year, which is sort of like, you know, can't convert layups at times, get in foul trouble, make the three occasionally, taking stupid two. Like all these little things that like if he cleaned up the little like crappy areas of his game, like just on the margins, he would be a much better player. And it's still 3 years into this since the second season. We still have the same kind of guys making the same stupid mistakes, it feels like.
He does have Yusuf Nurkic disease where instead of dunking when he can dunk, he puts up a bunny that doesn't go in and it drives you crazy sometimes.
Yeah, I always thought Turner's problem was he wasn't a great decision maker, and when it came into like crunch time and like in the moment, and you could see at the rim because he gets hesitant, he goes, let's go to the glass instead of dunking or something like that. He hasn't cleaned up, but has gotten better at it. Like, you know, I think his first season here, he made a mistake on a pick and roll, lost the pace of the game. First season, you move on, but that's like indicative of what he's been all 4 years, is like just this stupidity over stupidity at times. And it's like, it almost, I'd rather Sponsor there, who's like the most spatially aware player, who like literally always almost makes the right play at the right moment. Yeah, occasionally he screws up, but most of the time, the offensive end, he's in the right spot at the right moment, making the right pass, which Turner like rarely ever does.
Well, they haven't popped more. He's been rolling more this year, though, which has been interesting. I still, though, we're being too harsh on him. Like, his defense has been incredible. He is the second best net rating of any starter, which is awesome. And his defense, again, to go back to that, has been so good. He was great on Gasol. He was great on Jared Allen. He was fine in the Bucks game. His role in the Bucks game was really hard. He was almost like free safetying it, pivoting between stretching out on Lopez and protecting the rim. He did a pretty good job. Tonight was probably his worst defensive game, but it wasn't bad. It was just his worst game. Towns is a tough matchup, so that is what it is. But the fouls were really bad.
And that's the only good center they played so far, really. Gasol, I mean, at this point, I don't know where he's at in his career.
But to pivot to the fouls, which is a problem for both him and Sabonis, a lot of it to this game was like Collison just got destroyed on screens. All of a sudden, these guys have free runs to the rim. Turner is behind. He has to slide over. He has no option. Like, it's tough.
Yeah, the Timberwolves, I mean, the problem with the Pacers right now is that they are good enough to beat every bad team in the league, so they'll win 45 games, but they're just not good enough to beat any of the really good teams. Like, it felt like they were going to make a step, could have made a step this year, and it doesn't matter what's going to happen. They're probably going to win 45 games, which is going to be a little bit lower than last year, but probably what they should have won last year. And it's going to be probably enough for a 6 or 5 seed, depending on how the rest of the East plays out.
No, there are two road games they lost were against good teams on the road. Like, I'm not going
to. Yeah, but they're going to lose to every good team, I think, the rest of the, like, they're not going to beat any of these good teams on the road. Like last year, they went into Minnesota and won. I know Butler didn't play, but
their best player didn't play.
But they also didn't lose Milwaukee on the road once last year. They beat him in Milwaukee one time. I just don't think they have enough firepower to win against some of the, like, I would consider Minnesota with Butler there, like, one of the top 10 teams in the league, probably on the 10th, 11th range. So, I mean, I don't think they're going to beat those kind of teams consistently. They'll beat the bottom 10 to 12, but they're going to kind of be stuck in this mediocre range again, 12 to 15, that they are almost every year. And they've been in the league since.
They had what, like the 12th? They had like the 12th most wins in the league last year. That's not weird.
No, but I mean, I was, you know, you're looking for them to take a step, right? I mean, that you go, the idea is you go from
People who thought they were win more were not thinking.
No, I didn't think that, but you're looking for that. You're looking for signs of something to take a step. And instead, it looks like they're the same team under Paul George with different, it's new faces, same things happening over again.
They have the same core, seven guys.
Yeah, but you mortgage your future on Turner being the next, like, their number two, and he's not. So, I mean, at some point, you know, you had all the draft picks. You had a couple, you had Turner 11th pick who should have turned into something.
Overpaying to keep Miles Turner by $3 million is now mortgaging your future.
No, but they could have traded him. Like, 2 years ago, his trade asset value was huge, and they could have traded him for an asset to play at Paul George 2 years ago.
They probably thought he fit well with whatever they were doing, and they thought they were pivoting to a rebuild when they traded him away.
No, but if they had decided We're committed to keeping Paul George 3 seasons ago. They could have traded Turner for his rookie year when he had all the potential for something good to keep George.
We are way off the rails, though.
No, I'm just saying that's what they sort of did. They made the decision that, listen, we don't really – we are worried about 3 years. And I think they gave the choice that, like, if PG's here, he's here. If he's not, he's not. Whatever. We're going to build kind of around Turner. That's kind of the decision they made at some point between Paul George's last year and second to last year. And so I don't know if that was the right decision right now. I mean, I think they need to build an Oladipo, and that might involve moving some of these guys because – you know, I think everywhere else, the guys, you know, they had a bad game against Minnesota, like the bench just struggled. But I think everywhere else, they're pretty solid. It's really at this, like, number two player spot, and they need to get a guy that could be the number two. And I think they can use Turner as kind of a piece for that.
You know, what's funny is, like, before this game, I was thinking about what we were going to talk about in this episode. I was like, well, a lot of it's going to be the bench, right? Like, they've been really good. You know, McDermott was their only positive player against the Bucks. Like, they had a really good bench games against the Nets. And the Grizzlies, I was like, okay, this is great. Hopefully, the Tibbs game will show up. They'll be good against the Wolves, and then we'll talk about that. And then the Wolves just found a way to shut him down. They stretched him out with Tolliver and a lineup that somehow made no sense and worked really well. And they found a way to score. And the bench didn't look as good. Tyreek couldn't hit anything. Kojo looked pretty bad. And all of a sudden, it's pivoted really that discussion outside of Turner of, like, is the bench really that good, or do they just beat up on two crummy benches? And
that's what I mean with this team, is they're good enough to beat all the bad. I think we should sort of pivot to actually talk about the Bucks game for a little bit, because that was a rough game, and that, like, was
beat by math, and you hate to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote this actually in my Monday piece for Indy Cornrows, but, like, so I think the Bucks have taken, what, well, as of Monday, they had taken, I think, 9 or 6, I'm forgetting, by 2 or 3 before Monday, mid-range shots total. They made zero. Good. They took the Pacers, on the other hand, were, like, averaging, I think, in the 20s. They put up the most shots between 12 and 15 feet. And, you know, last year it worked for them. They were, like, the king of just dominating the mid-range and just taking those easy buckets and draining them. And it makes sense at times. But the Bucks just, man, they were running the Pacers off the three-point lines for the purpose of them taking long twos, and they could not convert them.
Yeah, they literally would just drop Brook Lopez to the basket the second any action happened at the top of the key and say, all right, just pull up from 15. I dare you. And they would. And they made about a number they usually make, but that's a terrible shot. And look at that. The Bucks just smoked them. They got a million open threes because that's how their offense works. They spread it out for Giannis. They kill them. Like, that kind of stuff works today. There's a reason a lot of teams keep migrating to that. And look at this. The Bucks look incredible. This is why I liked Budenholzer so much all summer. That kind of stuff has to happen eventually. I mean, the mid-range is just not going to work.
Right. So if you look at the game, the Bucks made, like, 6 more shots than the Pacers. The Pacers, though, won the free throw battle by 6 points. Usually that results, what, in a 5 to 7 point loss? Yeah. Right, 5-point loss. It's probably, if you give them, let's say you give them 2 threes, so they give them 10 points to make it back. So you lose by somewhere between, like, 5 and 7 points. Yet they were just never in this game. I mean, first quarter,
they were a little bit. Or they would have made to zero. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, the first quarter, they were okay. They were in it for a little while. And then smoked in that run for starting 8 on 8-0 run. So I don't know what you do about that. I think, you know, that first game in Milwaukee is going to be tough anyways. Milwaukee's opening a new stadium. Giannis is going to make an ascendance. I mean, there's just a lot of things that we're going to point towards a loss. What?
I didn't think they had a chance in that game anyway.
Yeah. So I would, that game, I sort of they didn't take more threes, but I wasn't going to knock them for whatever happened. But the Minnesota game sort of just compounded the same problems I have with the Bucks.
I didn't have a ton of problems with the Bucks, but the way the bench didn't work as well against the Wolves was really threw me off, because I thought that's where they could have a chance against even a shallower team like Minnesota. So not seeing that is what concerned me the most from this particular game.
I think the bench is going to have its struggles at times as they're trying to figure it out. I think that was part of tonight.
I wonder if it's like if Tyreek struggles, the whole bench struggles too, because he's so important to what they do, and he could not do anything in this game.
Well, and McDermott, too, at the same time. McDermott's not hitting shots that closes up the floor.
Yeah, he only took 2 the whole game, too. They were doing a great job chasing him around.
Yeah, they were locking him up. I think they had did they have Josh Okogie on him? I think
Okogie was on him a bit. Yeah, he was good. I like that kid.
Yeah, he had a really good game. He kind of destroyed the Pacers, to be honest.
He shot a little too frequently for my taste, but, I mean, he's a rookie, and he played pretty good D, so I'll give him a lot of credit. But, yeah, and then Tyus Jones was pretty good, too. Like, the bench was way more solid than I expected. Gorgui Dieng was good. Like, Gorgui Dieng is never good. Gorgui Dieng was getting fouled a lot too. That was Sabonis's pitfall in this game. In the first quarter, at least, he didn't have very many in the second half. O'Quinn was really good, and I talked about O'Quinn on yesterday's show, so I don't have to talk too much about him again. But so he seems to be a bright spot on this bench. But yeah, it seemed like Tyreek couldn't hit anything, and thus, you know, they couldn't get as much ball handling going and get the second unit rolling, which was their key in the other three games.
Yeah, and if you take it in a vacuum, this game would also be a hard one to win too, just because it's in Minnesota. Minnesota's a good team with Butler out there. Minnesota seemed to have this weird chip on their shoulder now that Butler like wanted to leave, and
yeah,
it was gonna be a tough game anyways. I guess you look at it, and I'm just worried that they beat two bad teams and they haven't showed any like they looked okay against the Wolves and like terrible against the Bucks against two pretty good teams. So I'm concerned that it's gonna be kind of how it goes, where they're gonna beat up on the bottom of the East and the bottom of the West, and they're gonna kind of struggle.
Okay, also this Wolves game. I mean, they only played one bad quarter. We're really down on one, and it was awful. And I'm going to throw some Nate criticism here. He called that time, they were down like 77-73, and he didn't take a timeout. And then the Wolves got the lead from 4-8, and I think they had the ball and they were down 4. And I think if he had called it then, they might have weathered that run a little better. And that really was when they took it over. And he didn't sub at all when they took that timeout. Vic stayed on the bench. I think a little bit of that run's got to be blamed on him. But besides that fourth quarter, they didn't play that bad in this game. But the fourth quarter, that mini game was not good.
No, and actually that fourth quarter reminded me of the Game 7 in Cleveland last year.
Yeah, a little bit. It did. He did use the bench very awkwardly.
It was last year was a tie game, I think, or one-point game. And then the bench comes out and kind of struggles. He don't call his timeout at the right time. I get it. Vic played 34 minutes, so you probably want to bring him in, and it's probably not worth it for this random rest game. And with the Wolves, the problem with the Wolves, when you play close teams, then Butler ends up playing 37 minutes, which is, like, hard to match. You know,
he was
a lot of minutes.
He was very good. He was efficient, and his defense was great. He was really good.
Can we do something more positive?
Yes, I like positive things.
So I think Mitchell Deeble's been pretty damn good through four games.
Yeah.
I think he's been. I think he's been.
What's funny is the mid-range is just not falling for him at all. If that comes around, he'll be even better, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he took a lot of shots tonight, and a lot of them were in garbage. I think he probably took three or four shots that just he was chucking up threes towards the end of the game. So his stat line probably could have been more like 50% from the field instead of being 8-for-23. But I thought, the first game he did what he usually does when the both teams out. He kind of let the other guys control. He just kind of sat there. And then I thought he had two pretty good games over the weekend. You know, I don't think he was fantastic against the Bucks, but I thought he was good. And I thought he was good, really good against the Nets.
This is one of our worst chemistry podcasts ever. I keep interrupting you.
Well, it's because we're on a weird Wi-Fi, so it's hard for you to hear me, I feel like.
It is. I apologize for that. He was good against the Bucks. He was the only guy who could really get anything going. Besides McDermott, that was so random. He was incredible in that game. Grizzlies game, he didn't have to play that much. He only played 25 minutes. Nets game, he didn't play that much either. Actually, he played over 30 minutes in that game, but they didn't need him to. They took the game away without him on the court, actually. He's been very good. It's been very strange to see how the waves work with him. Like, he had the most rebounds tonight on the whole team, which where'd that come from? They've been running some sets for him off ball, which I really like. And that leads me to what I wanted to talk about is Darren Collison has been used super differently this year. Last year with Vic on the ball more, Collison could operate off the ball, get a few more open looks. This year, Collison's been more initiating, and he has not looked nearly as good.
Yeah. Again, you look at the stat line, it's a tale of two games. When you look at when they put the Grizzlies and the Nets, everybody looks pretty good. Collison seems to be bad that first game, but then you look at when they played the pretty good teams, Collison really struggled. So I don't know. The thing is, I like them putting the ball in Vic's hands more because that's more explosive. I like them actually to do that earlier and kind of get Vic, and I really try to get going early on in games. I feel like they're sometimes waiting too long to let him get going. You know, he always has his burst that feels like either like mid-second quarter or third quarter, which it could be fine in the game, but I feel like at times when you're down, you just need to like let him sort of do his thing and try to bring him back at times. I guess my thing with Collison is I think ultimately he's going to be replaced by one of the guys on the bench, and so I think that's sort of where we're heading, to be honest.
I don't think he'll get replaced. His role is just very different.
His minutes will get replaced by the bench guys. He might still start, but he's overall minutes.
I can agree with that. I can definitely agree that he could play less. And me and you have both kind of been on Corey Joseph as a little more of a long-term option anyway. Kojo played more minutes in him tonight, although I don't think Kojo is very good in the fourth quarter of this mini game. He was a big problem in that bad run to start the fourth. Anyway, yeah, DC on the ball more has been odd. He's still taking that mid-range crap that I just hate with all my soul. But a lot of what made him so good is that he could space the floor. And if they're not using him in a way where he's spacing the floor, then they're kind of mitigating some of what made him so great last year. And I don't know why they're doing that.
I think it's just a transition thing almost. They're just trying to almost turned into out of relying on him so much. I would think. I mean, I know it's a weird thing to say, but I feel like he's sort of, I don't know. They want to involve him at the end of the year, I had a guess. And so I don't know. I don't know if they're trying to push him out that per se, but I think they're sort of like, they're trying to build a real offense around him because the main ball handler at times, and they want to see if Collins can fit in or not, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get why they're trying to do that role. But I don't think it's working very well for him. And I don't know, maybe they'll try to pivot back eventually, but I don't think that seems to be working effectively. But that's enough about him. I just wanted to get a little few thoughts in.
Yeah, I guess another positive I would say, which is going to be a problem because he'll finally his hot streak will cool down. But Bogdan's played pretty well through the first four games.
Yeah, his defense was terrible.
Five that buck games, he was good. He's been good
his
offensively.
His defense was freaking terrible in this mini game. But other than that particular thing, he's been very good. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. The Bucks game was easily his worst game. But playing against that long team is always going to be tough for him, just given the way he plays. And he was not like so bad. He couldn't hit a shot, but his defense was okay in that game. Like, whatever. Anyway,
I mean, he's missed 3 threes all year so far.
Yeah, he's been very solid. He's a great secondary option. It's very weird that he's like the second best offensive player on this team, but he is.
I guess the problem with the Pacers too is I'm looking for kind of that run is because where they play kind of a crappy run and pick up some big amount of wins in a row. I don't know if they have that really. They kind of have this stretch where they keep playing bad team and good team. So they don't ever get an opportunity to really like win 3 or 4 in a row. They have this weird where they start like, 7 of the first 10 games are on the road. Also weird. I mean,
this next stretch, it's like a bunch of road games or games versus play. Pat Boylan just tweeted this, so I'm kind of paraphrasing. I think their next like 12 games, every single one of them is either on the road or against a playoff team from last year or both. Like, that's tough.
Yeah, playing. So they have 4 home. The next 4 of them is Portland, Boston, Houston, Philly.
And I know the Cavs are a playoff team, whatever, but like it's a road game.
But those are four home games against playoff teams. Right. That's 4 home games. And that's
they're going to have to they'll find a way to tread.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking for when this team might make a run. Maybe, make a run. Like, remember last year in January, January or February, they went 10-2.
They did terrible in December and they did great in December. I just said the same month. They did terrible in December and great in January.
So I guess we're looking for that kind of run, right?
Yes. Yep. It'll happen eventually.
We're looking when they make that run.
If they're playing 12 really hard games right now, that means they have an easier run coming later. Just how it goes.
Yeah, I guess you're probably right. I'm just worried again they're not going to be able to compete with the better teams of the league. But I guess Minnesota will be a test San Antonio will be a test because they're probably right where the Pacers are in range of like talent wise.
I think raising their expectations to competing with the best was fool's gold anyway. But I think we should take a break. We've been talking for a long time, and I feel like we need to take a break.
I want to make one more point though. But the problem is that they competed with Boston, they competed with Cleveland last year, and so I get those teams got better, and the Pacers probably stayed stagnant. And that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, they did. That's not a problem. It just is what it is. They're punting on their improvement. They're going for internal improvement this year. They'll probably go for external next year. So it is what it is.
They're one player away. So let's take a break real quick, and then we'll talk about the San Antonio Spurs game on Wednesday. Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. That's MyBookie.ag, the one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Now that I am 21 years old, I can legally bet. But I can legally bet, which is awesome. I love to bet, baseball, football, basketball. But for my bookie promo, I wanted to hit the Tony and he give maybe an interesting bet to take this week for the Pacers or basketball related. So Tony, you got like a bet this week to give?
Do I have to do a serious one or can I kind of a goofy one?
Let's do a goofy one that, it's a make-believe casino. Let's call it that way for us.
Make-believe casino one is Corey Joseph changes his last name to Corey Brewer. So there's another Corey Brewer in the NBA. Real bet is over under 1.5 3-point misses for Bojan Bogdanović the rest of the week. And I'm going under. He's on fire.
All right. That's a pretty good bet. I think I'll take the over on that. I think he gets 2, but you can make 1.5. Yeah. Remember, if you guys go to MyBookie, use the promo code Locked On. That's LOCKEDON, Locked On. You get $1 match for every dollar you put down in your deposit, up to $1,000 for your first time user of MyBookie. That's MyBookie.ag and use the promo code Locked On. Welcome back into the Locked On Pacers podcast. All right, so we teased it before the break. We're going to do our weekly preview now. We'll start with San Antonio Spurs. Tony, you have the numbers up in San Antonio? You want to, can we finally do that again?
Then also, we didn't. We can, but I'm going to start with a different number. Currently, the Spurs are dismantling the Lakers in LA in the first quarter. They are already up double digits in the first, the Lakers, the LA Lakers. It's 31-16. Brutal. But the Spurs, before this game, they've only played two. By the time you're listening, they'll have played three. They are the slowest team in the NBA, 30th in pace. Pacers are also very slow. I think they were 24th before this Minnesota game, so expect a slow one. They're 6th in offense, surprisingly, 116.1 offensive rating, and 27th in defense, 120.8 defensive rating. But remember, it's only been two games for these teams, so tons of noise in those numbers. It's just
what But they always do their offense work, I feel like. It's like the biggest thing is they just can create offensive coaching.
And they're always slow. It's the Pop way to find a good shot, taking his time, you know.
Yeah, so Aldridge, the two games, is playing 39 minutes a game, so that's also might be helping their offense.
He's shooting terribly. I mean, just ridiculously bad, 36% from the field. He's been awesome on the glass, but that's also – he's playing a lot. But, yeah, holy cow, he cannot hit the broadside of a barn so far this year.
I do think, though, DeRozan fits well in this offense. I think he fits kind of right in, right?
Yeah, I like DeRozan a lot, more than – pretty much every Pacers fan.
Well, it's worth noting he's 5 for 5 tonight against LA so far.
But yeah, he's just a good basketball player, man. People really hate on him in the analytics era, but I think that's stupid. I mean, he's a positive player almost all the time. I mean, he melts in the playoffs. The criticisms are completely fair about that. But in the regular season, guy, he's great. Pop will get the most out of him, I feel like. He's averaging 28 points a game for the first two. He's been great.
He's and the best player on the best team in the East and the record wise in the East last year. Yeah, I mean, that's
absolutely
shouldn't be underrated, put it that way.
Exactly. It's very odd the way people think about Jordan. Also, Rudy Gay has been kind of not vintage. That's the wrong word. He's been the good version of Rudy Gay, 15 points a game for him through the first two, his three balls falling, and he's kind of always seemed like he could be a shooter. He's just not. The unsustainable thing about the Spurs has been their 3-point shooting in general, though. I mean, even outside of Gay, they're at 44% so far this season. So I don't think that that will be a sustainable number. But, you know, it's something to look out for as more teams shoot threes. They have – people said they didn't have any shooters, but Rudy Gay, Pau Gasol, Bertans, and Bellinelli are all shooting pretty well.
Do you remember when Rudy went to Toronto, got traded there, and it was a disaster with him, DeRozan, and Lowry?
Who?
When Rudy Gay got traded to Toronto
Every time I say Rudy Gay's name, I think about that video of that guy at the Grizzlies game just like – no, not this guy. And he hits the buzzer beater. Have you seen that?
I have not seen that video, actually.
Oh, my gosh. It's so funny. He's like, Rudy Gay, like, catches an inbounds pass, and the Grizzlies are down one. And the Raptors fans like, no, not Rudy Gay. He's going to hit a game winner. No. And then he hits a game winner, and he screams. It's so funny.
I just remember the disaster that was Rudy Gay, Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan at one point.
That's what I
remember. They were just terrible together.
It was supposed to be okay, and they were not. They were not okay.
I do like how no matter what Pop could bring in five players for each other and he'd make it work. Like he just
I know it's ridiculous. And like
a good coach.
Like DeJounte Murray was supposed to be like this awesome defensive point guard carrying this team's defense since they don't have any good defenders. He's been out and they're not terrible. Like Derek White was supposed to be their point guard depth. He's out. Like Patty Mills has been playing a lot more than he expected to. He's at 26 minutes per game the first two. They even have DeMar playing some point guard. Like they have been somehow treading water with weird lineups.
I kind of can't wait to see like him turn DeMar into like an MVP
candidate. I know. I don't think
like, he'll be. Might have been not this season, but 1 year maybe.
He's not gonna probably ever get to like MVP levels, but I mean,
he'll putting up what 26, 6.5, and 3.5 this year. If he did that all year, he might be close to it.
That's true. They'd have to win quite a few games for that to happen. So for this game in particular, I think this could be a good game to play Turner and Sabonis together because you'll see a lot of Aldridge Gasol. You'll see a lot of Pirtle Gasol. You'll see a lot of Pirtle Aldridge. They like to go kind of too big. So good chance to get them some run against a lineup that they actually kind of fit against.
Did you see that the Pacers also played Sabonis and O'Quinn together tonight?
Yes, and it did not work at all.
No, and I don't get what Nate McMillan's doing. That's a side note, though. You know, I like to see Sabonis turn together. I would, you know, I hate on turning the whole first segment, but maybe together they can make something work a little better for him. I don't know. I don't know if a sandwich has got to determine how they play together. They probably played what all of 20 minutes together. Turner keep getting foul troubles. They keep not overlapping minutes, basically. So it's mostly played the third game. So I don't know how many minutes they've actually played in total together yet. But it'd be interesting to see if they can get some like. If they can play well together, they stay on the court like for an extended period of time. You know, like Milne's like, let's just ride this for 10 minutes kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree. And maybe it could be working in it could work in sports. You know, it works well with three guards. I think they're not rating with Tyreek, Vic, and whoever is at point guard has been pretty good. So maybe that lineup would work well. And I, you know, matchup wise, straight up, I think that would work pretty well against this team. I mean, their only real three is Rudy Gay, and he might even be better as a fourth and a three in the modern NBA. So, you know, I think this is a good game for that duo in particular. And obviously, DeRozan is a terrible defender, so Vic could have a nice one, especially after he hit that buzzer beater against the Spurs last year.
Yeah, Vic's been a sneakily Spurs killer the past two games.
He's good in their other game too, if I recall correctly, but I could be recalling wrong.
Yeah, Cora just always has a good game against the Spurs too, as his former
revenge game, baby.
Revenge game. You want to do Butchers?
We love the fake revenge game narrative on the Locked On Pacers podcast.
Yeah, I mean. I'm trying to think, is there any other connections, I guess.
Bojan had the Nets revenge game a few nights ago. Tyreek had the Grizzlies revenge game. It was great. It's all been fun. And are there other connections? Not really. Not really, right?
No, not really. I mean, I'm trying to think how you link DeRozan play with Joseph in Toronto. Is another revenge kind of thing? I don't know. You want to do Butchers?
Yeah. My butcher is LaMarcus Aldridge in this game. He's just a hard guy to handle. And I know Thad's a great defender and he can handle him pretty well. But when Aldridge is in at center, whoever is on him is going to have a tough time. He's been actually good on the glass this year. So, and Pop always finds a creative way to make him more effective. So they're going to have to find a way to shut him down, because post defense is important and the Spurs are good at creating out of the post. So stopping Aldridge will be the key for me.
Yeah, Thad has not been that great on defense, I don't think. I mean,
I think he's been fine. He's been typical Thad.
He's fine, but great. By the way, I thought he was a lot better last year.
Not as good as last year, but still good. How about that?
Yeah, I think he got destroyed in the Nets game. And he seemed like he gets just completely beat sometimes, where he's a step slower than it used to be. Or maybe not full step, but maybe a quarter step or half a step slower, which is sort of
starting
to see the decline. Oh, that's true. I mean, that could be the issue with him, right?
We'll give him a little time there.
You're right. Yeah, I didn't think about that. I forgot that he had the foot injury. So that could be why it's a little slower than not just like the slow age decline that I kind of
expected. Is your butcher DeRozan?
Yeah, I think they're going to put Bojan on him and DeRozan's going to destroy Bojan. Because they seem to keep doing that. They put Bojan on Butler, right? They put Bojan on Middleton.
Can I interject for a sec?
Yeah.
Wasn't one of Bojan's like very few very good defensive games last year on DeRozan at the game we were at? Do you remember that?
I'm trying to... You know what? That game is so overpowered by the way Lance played that I don't think I even remember what happened defensively.
I feel like we talked about that a lot, because my thing with Bojan's always been like guys who don't really move side to side a lot, he can kind of handle. And DeMar's pretty straight up and down. I mean, he can.
All right. I'm going to look it up real quick. I'm
going to look at well, he can kind of handle DeMar.
I think that was the game that Kyle Lowry kind of did. If I remember
it. I can't remember.
He had a really kind of this good.
Why do I feel like he defended him? I'm probably wrong. Never mind.
I don't know. We'll find out.
I like the pick though, and Pop uses DeMar differently than my God, what was his name? Dwayne Casey does so.
Yeah, Dwayne Casey was. I mean, the thing about Pop is I think he just knows how to use players to their best ability. I don't know why he just does. So DeRozan had 13 points that game that we went to. So that, you know, 6 of 16.
Right. That's not bad. So,
that's
some people DeRozan would call that
what 25 DeRozan. Game last year.
Some people would call that typical.
No, but DeRozan up 25 a game last year, right?
He shoots more than 16 times too. Yeah, that's pretty good. I'll give him credit.
Yeah. I mean, that's holding DeRozan in the regular season at 13 points is pretty good. So,
but Pop uses him differently, as I was saying. So maybe we can just throw that out the window.
Yeah, but I think they'll use a lot of ISO him on Bojan and let him just kind of go.
Right.
I mean, that's the go-to move, right? Why would you want to switch Bojan on it? Why would you get any kind of switch? Maybe Turner, right. But I bet it.
Right. They're going to not switch anything. They didn't switch at all against Memphis, so I don't think they will in this one either.
It makes sense. They'll try not to, at least. I mean, they'll. Well, better at DeRozan, you can drop back because you can't shoot a jumper that well.
Right. That's fair. That'll help Turner a lot, too. Yeah, it'd be a big Turner defensive game, although people are going to yell at me no matter what I say about him, so whatever.
I just think he needs to put up 20 points. Like, he needs to put up a couple times. He doesn't do it every night.
But,
like,
not the second option.
He just throws some off.
It's not going to happen. Just don't think of him like that, okay? It's just like, don't think of him like that.
Then why give him all that?
Fourth option. Just don't give him like that.
Sorry, I cussed, but why give him all that effing money?
Because he's a very, very good defensive player.
All right. We need X factor for the game. Give me an X factor.
We can do this all night.
That's why we're not.
Vic's a boring pick. I'll go, man, I picked LaMarcus as the butcher, so I'll just flip and go Thad. Thad guarding him could be key, and Thad on offense has been weird. Like, they put him around the basket, which is good because he's good at those duck-ins. He times those pretty well, but it also does muck up some spacing. So we will be interesting to see how he plays, but I think he could be the key in this one. The glue guy, when he falls apart, makes the whole team fall apart, so we'll see.
Yeah, so Thad has taken, what, three threes. He hasn't made one yet this year. I'm concerned about him offensively right now. Just if he can't, his 3-point shot even close to 30% or like 35%, it's going to ruin their.
I thought he was 30% last year.
He was 32 last year. So he's taken three this year and not made a single one. I don't know what that means. It just, if Turner's not shooting threes and Dad's shooting threes, then all of a sudden their whole ability to stretch the floor is no longer have any value.
Yes, it is.
And Kyle can't make threes. I mean, it's just like, what are we doing here? If only Vic can bang shoot threes, what are you running? Get, you know, got to fix your offense, run something else kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Are we all here?
Maybe you could figure something out in this game. I mean, the Duckins have been working. Like, I feel like probably 6 to 8 of his 9 points have been from that every game. But and he's shooting 65% inside the arc, which is crazy. He just can't hit a three for belief. So
yeah, and that's, I mean, that was probably the problem last year too. Sometimes he just couldn't hit a shot. Right. Some games he just couldn't, but most time he was good at, he was really good at getting the backdoor pass in from somebody, like Vic set him up on the backdoor for the over the head layup. That's what he was really good at last year, I feel like.
Who is your X factor?
I think it's a bonus. I think Turner gets a foul trouble within 5 minutes and on whoever they decide to switch him on to, and they end up getting the switch. And then Sabonis comes in and actually plays well, and I don't know, then it becomes kind of an issue.
Oh, everybody wants that to be the case.
Well, I think Sabonis played really well the first two games. Then he obviously didn't play the Nets game, which he probably would have played really well because the Nets suck. And then he played okay tonight, and I don't know how injured he is with his knee, so that's always a question. But I feel like he's going to put up 15 and 10 every game, and it's going to be like at some point, be like, wow, this guy's really just consistent and good.
Well, it's easy for him to get 15 and 10 when the way they use him. I mean, I'm not saying, look, he's good. He's obviously doing well. I mean, his role is just so much different than Turner's. Like, you can't compare their stats.
Well, I compare it in the sense that Sabonis' offensive game doesn't always just come from setting him up. You know what I mean? He gets a lot of offensive rebounds that really help him get extra buckets.
On his own misses.
Like, he's always seemed like, in the opposite end, he's fighting more. Turner, that's not fair. Turner does fight for rebounds. I mean, I've seen Turner just doesn't seem to get any breaks when he fights for a rebound. You know what I mean? Like, he had a couple of tip-ins against the Wolves, where like he literally got his whole hand on the ball, tipped in, and like it rolled out. Like, so I mean, some of this is just like things are not breaking right now for Turner. It just seems like Turner almost is like walking around with bad luck, it feels like to me, all the time.
I think Sabonis is clearly a better rebounder than Turner. I don't want to dispute that at all, and I know you're not trying to, but
no, you know, I mean,
I tried to say that earlier when I talked about Sabonis and O'Quinn. You know, the second unit doesn't have the Victor Oladipo level creation, the Bojan Bogdanovic level secondary score. So they run more stuff through the post in the Sabonis O'Quinn way, and that you know I don't think Turner is as good as them in that role necessarily, but it works well for those guys with the group they're with.
Maybe they should have Turner run with the bench unit a little bit. Just saying. Maybe that should be an option.
You know, if he ran that role and played well, I think people would think of him a lot differently. But I don't think they'll ever do it because they like his defense with the starting group, which makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's whatever. So I was saying, I think Sabonis is gonna have a good game.
I hope so. I like watching him when he has good games.
Right, it's probably going to be Powell guarding him off the bench, maybe?
Yes, probably almost certainly, yes. Or Jakob Poeltl.
Yeah, Poeltl hasn't played that much, though.
No, he has not.
Powell's played about double with minutes. And I kind of like that idea of, I don't know, Sabonis seems like he can bang with anybody now.
Powell is so slow.
Well, and Sabonis finally got some size, I feel like. So I feel like he can just kind of, I'd like to see him in Adam. That's kind of the guy I'm waiting to watch him play. But I think he can kind of go battle with anybody out there, it seems like.
I agree. Should we talk Cavs? Oh, we have to do, I think the Pacers win this game. Sorry, I jumped ahead too far. I really do.
Yeah, that's why. So you think they win this game?
I do, yeah. I think it'll be close, but I just like – I think they have a good chance. I think they match up actually very well with the Spurs as opposed to the Timberwolves. And I think that the best player in this game is on the Pacers. We're in the Wolves game. I think it's on the Wolves, and I think that matters. So I'm going to take the Pacers in this one.
Yeah, I think they win too. I think part of it has to do is I don't think they're as intimidated by the coaching that the Spurs and other teams are at times because Nick Millen coaches with Popovich on the USA.
Not that
Millen's even a level of Pop, but I think he knows some of his style and he knows kind of some of the more weaknesses that other coaches would know because he spends more time with him than a lot of other coaches do.
You think they also? So, you also think they win?
I do. I think they get their first road win finally. But I picked every game so far, I think. We didn't talk about the Timberwolves game, so I can't typically say. I'd probably have to lose the Timberwolves game if I was being honest. So, yeah, I think they win.
Yeah, I do too. And I think they're going to win the game after too, which we can talk about after this quick break.
All right, Tony, how bad are the Cavs?
Man, way worse than I thought they'd be. Their defense is so awful. Second worst in the league. I don't know who could possibly be worse than them. They just gave up 133 to the Hawks, who are starting Alex Len at center. Like, they are bad.
I mean, Cleveland's miserable. Who do they – I mean, they have –
it's
brutal. They're giving up 116, 131, and 133 points through
three. They can't stop anything. They're giving up 53% shooting. Like, it's just so bad.
I mean, what do we expect? They were the worst team to make the finals, like in the history of the finals. They were literally just LeBron. LeBron was carrying that team. Like, I don't know. I can't
their defense analogy. Was already bad, and then they lost the best player ever, and now their offense is bad too. I thought they'd be better. I don't know why. Maybe I read too much in. We can hit some highlights for them. Chetty Osman has been very good, hitting his three ball, 17 points a game through three games for Chetty. And everyone was psyched about him in Cleveland, and they were right to be. He's actually looking pretty good. And yes, Kevin Love is the other one. You're absolutely right. 20-14, looking like Timberwolves Kevin Love, which is hilarious because he's shooting horribly from the field. So if he actually gets going one game, he could look even better.
Yeah. So what point is Kevin Love or get traded? What time do they? At what point do they start selling this team off for its assets?
Oh my gosh!
December 15th. I mean, the searching guys. December 16th,
12:01 a.m. See ya.
I mean, they just have to go into a full rebuild that they did before when LeBron left. They have to get their number one pick 3 years in a row and build the team that way, right? I mean, that's their best bet. I mean, that's how they got LeBron back. If they didn't get LeBron back, they still would have been good because they would have had Andrew Wiggins and Kyrie Irving, and they could have had Victor Oladipo if they weren't idiots. And so they could have had a good team even if LeBron had come back, they could have been a good team. So that's their opportunity. They got to just bottom out and get rid of, you know, sell Kevin Love for a first round pick, which they can probably get from somebody here or some other young guys. Maybe you can get Kevin Love for Miles Turner today. That'd be a good little turn.
You could rock Chetty and Sexton for like 5 years and just slowly watch them improve and eventually be good. So Nance is pretty good too. I mean, Nance is 20.
I mean, I think,
but. And they can
get, I think, the move next summer.
They get some for Korver, yeah, too. Go ahead.
I think the move next summer is Kevin Love for Miles Turner.
Oh, no chance I would do that. Bleep, see ya.
Why not?
Because Turner is impactful and will not be declining on his deal, while Kevin Love will be declining.
Kevin Love, like $24 million a year now. That's what he makes?
No, his next max is much higher, isn't it?
I thought it was 5 years, 120 he signed for.
No,
he didn't sign for the full max.
I did not think so. Whoa, I clicked on the wrong thing. I'm so sorry.
5 years, 113. Once again, Adam was pretty damn close.
You were pretty damn close. So now he's got $24 million this year, and then 28, 31, 31, 28. I'm sorry, yeah, 29, so 31, 31, 28.
Much so higher. He did
sign. Over $10 million more than Turner.
So he got rid of his last year of his deal, right? And basically
he had to get the extension.
So he's got 4 years left on his contract. 4 years. So he's going to make – I was actually wrong. It's 4 years and 120.
Yeah, this season 5 years. Plus four more.
Okay. So, yeah, no, never mind. He's going to have a $30 million cap in 4 years.
No way I'm paying 34-year-old Kevin Love $29 million.
I'll tell you what. Kevin Love, for all of the shit he's taken the last couple years, he deserves good
player.
This.
Good basketball player.
Cool. And he's cashing in on the fact that this team basically brought him in, made him a punching bag for four seasons, and then lost other good players, and he's the last one left. It's like, I'm going to take that cash and be happy.
Yeah, I know. I'm happy for him. He deserved it after his play in Minnesota, too.
Yeah, and he's been the punching bag of this team, and he's for
you know what else he does really well? He plays well against the Pacers.
Yes, he kind of does, right?
Him and Thompson both play well against the Pacers just because of schematically. That was the worst sentence I've ever said. Schematically, they have an advantage that allows them to play well against the Pacers on the glass for Thompson, pretty much everywhere for Love. So it'll be interesting to see if they can find a way to change that. This could be the game that Sabonis becomes more impactful for me the rest of this week.
Yeah, and this will hopefully be two wins in a row for them too.
I think they should have no trouble with the Cavs. I mean, the Cavs are basically a sieve on the defensive end. So
yeah, I mean, the Pacers beat bad teams, so this should be kind of not too bad.
I agree. I don't think Jordan Clarkson. I don't think Jordan Clarkson is going to keep scoring 18 points a game either. So I think they have no problem. Yes, Kevin Love. That's a lame butcher. Never mind. You can go first, and you can pick Kevin Love.
No, I'm going to pick Chetty Osman.
All right. Well, I'll pick Kevin Love. Do you just pick the guy who is scoring every game? Is that the move?
I think it is. I mean, that's how it's been through four games.
Yeah, he did not play good D against Minnesota. Holy moly.
He played the good D against the Nets. I mean, maybe he guarded Joe Harris, right? Joe Harris.
LeVert was played well guarded by Vic, ironically. He did okay against the Nets most games he's done.
Didn't he guard Harris? Wasn't that the guarding of Blount guarded?
No, they had Collison on Harris a little bit. He kept going under on screens, which was driving me crazy.
So then who did Bogdan guard in that game?
Who was their 30? I cannot remember. Joe Harris didn't start. He had someone else. Who was it? I cannot remember. Alan Crabb. Alan Crabb.
Oh, okay. That's who we started on.
Yeah. There it is.
Okay. But Harris played a bunch of minutes. I thought he guarded him when Harris put all his minutes.
I could be wrong. I don't remember.
I'm just looking at all the guys that you'll see. 19 points, 20 points. They was fine against Jeff Green because Jeff Green is crap. But then he's brilliant against the Bucks, right? Then he guard Middleton and kind of sting it up.
Yeah, Middleton had a great game. So you're right. I think picking that the Boyan guy is a good choice. And Chetty's been good this year, so maybe that keeps up.
Yeah, and plus, honestly, Chetty got 25 points there, still with my 30, so.
It's fun to pick Chetty. He's a cool guy.
I could see the game being like a 140, 120 game.
Another Nets game. All right, well, actually, you know, Kevin Love would be the trendy pick. I think we should keep Kevin Love alive in this discussion. I'll go Tristan Thompson. What was the playoff game where he finally started and everybody was like all up in arms about his Kardashian?
The last one.
He had 15 boards. He just ate everything alive and was awesome.
He killed our favorite player, Miles Turner.
He does kill Turner on the glass. He kills everyone on the glass. He killed Horford on the glass, which is hard to do. Tristan Thompson is the only player who can stop Al Horford. It's the weirdest thing in the NBA.
It's easier to kill Horford on the glass when you have LeBron on your team, though.
It is a lot easier.
Just because Horford is always worrying about where LeBron is.
Him and Love averaging a combined 25 rebounds a game is nuts. And Thompson, he just eats him alive. I mean, he's very good at reading misses. And he's shooting well this season, so he could have a nice game.
What's even crazier is they're averaging
so bad that hurts. What?
Thompson and Love are averaging more rebounds than the rest of the team combined.
Yo, that's crazy. You're right.
That's worse. That's just sometimes they get rebounds, right?
You're right. That's insane. Wow.
Yeah, the rest of them got 22.
Yeah, 141. That's nuts.
Yeah, they're just not a good team.
Look at you.
X factor wise, who do you got?
Oh, I was gonna pick Bojan. Hilariously.
All right, do it.
Yeah, if he can play moderately good, Deion Chetty, and shut down your guy while also shooting well like he has all year, I think he could change this game a lot. Just because the post battle is gonna be tough. George Hill can. Is my opinion of his defense now that he's getting older. Same with Sexton and his weird arm.
Such a bad sound.
Good. Sexton, same way. He looks like he's making all this effort with his arm thing, but he's not a good defender yet. So the guards could do well, but I think Bojan has the best chance to have a great game and swing it for the Pacers.
I think Vic has a great game.
Yeah, he probably will.
I don't know who's going to guard him. I don't know.
You don't think Jordan Clarkson and Rodney Hood could contain Victor Oladipo?
I think they couldn't contain him in the last playoff series, and I think they're in the playoffs last year they're contain him again. I mean, I don't know. I think he's going to see that floor, be pissed he lost Game 7 last year, and go off for.
Yeah, that's a good point. He'll see that Cavs look and just anger.
Yeah, I think with Vic a little bit I think he needs to just start flexing his ability. You know what I mean? Like I think he's letting everybody else get going and need to just kind of take the control of the game early on and say, I'm shooting 25 times. I'm going to make 15 of these, like that kind of crap.
Not differing like so much, but he is enough. Like what was the, was it Nets? He had like 20 at halftime. And I was like, oh, Vic's going to have like 36 this game. And then he finished with 25 because he did not care about scoring in the second half. I was like, oh man, that's boring.
Yeah. I wonder if he's pulling up and like trying to have room, like energy for the playoffs. But I don't know if I'm thinking that early. We're too early about the playoffs already. Probably. I don't know. I felt like in the Timberwolves game early on when he could have kind of got any shot he wanted and he didn't really do it. He kind of, I think in the first quarter, but then he kind of slowed down. He had a good, I think second quarter, not a good first quarter. I don't know. I was worried that he sort of, yeah, I think he had 15 points in the first half and then couldn't get it really.
That's what I was 15.
Going. And I don't know.
He didn't play a lot down the stretch though either. But yeah, I wanted him to get 30.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like he has another level that he's sort of holding back on himself right now, to be honest.
Understood. I get that. Maybe he won't do that this game because
and part of it is I don't think how many times am I going to watch Turner not set the right pick or screw up a pick for Oladipo and get it screwed up. There was a play in the end of this Bulls game where Turner was supposed to come up and set a pick on the right side. He took too long, and then Vic tried to like dribble past Butler, who Butler is the best one-on-one, maybe one of the best one-on-one defenders in the league. So he couldn't do it. And it was, oh, it was ridiculous. I'm so mad at Turner for tonight's game. Just so mad.
I can tell. He leads the league in screen assists this year. So
I know,
that,
but
it, that,
I
mean, one screen will be resolved. That one screen will be okay. Yeah, Towns is his kryptonite to be banned on D. So I'll, you know what? Credit to the Wolves. They have an amazing post player. Post player. I put in air quotes because people love post players, even though they mean nothing in the modern NBA. Anyway, yeah, you know what? I think Turner's gonna be good in this Cavs game too. I know Thompson is tough for him in terms of rebounding, but he can really pull Thompson away from the rim with some spacing. So he could have a good game.
Maybe. I don't even know if you should threes anymore.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm sorry. I think he scored 16 points, but it felt like the most unimpactful 16 points I've ever watched.
Adam's ready to trade Miles Turner for a second rounder right now.
I'm ready to start Sabonis and let Turner play with the bench guys. I feel like, all right. I feel like they coddled Turner for 4 years. It's like they built this great environment around him and they're like, we believe in you, but you can do it. And we're going to, and like somebody needs, like, when you know, Wilkins called him soft last year, like they need somebody to do that to him every time. Like somebody needs to be in his face yelling at him.
Set ridiculous expectations for guys the fourth option on offense to score crazy amounts of points a game.
I think, why is he the fourth option? Because they can't rely on him to be
the other guys are better scorers than him.
But why isn't the 6'11" 3-point shooting center who went number one overall and is
he's never been above average from 3-point range.
Well, why can't he be one? Like, what is he not? Why is he not working on that? Like, I just you
he probably
the problem is. I feel like at this point, like what is like, he's just a defensive first center, which is fine. But I feel like he wants to be more at times. And I don't know if he can, I don't know. It bothers me. It bothers me the way they've kind of like, the contract just bothers me. Like, why do they do contract that now?
That is what it is. It's sunk cost. All right. Now you got to live with them.
Yeah. It's the contract. That's what it is. It's not even the way he's playing. Like it's the cause I could live with this if I knew like, okay, he's not going to make, gonna make 12 million this year anyways, who cares? That's what he's worth. And not
I think he's 18. Worth more than 12. I don't think he's worth 18 though.
So
in there,
right? I'd say he has the stats he has right now at the end of the year. What would he have gotten in the open market 4 years? What,
60-65
maybe, right? It depends. There's not that many teams need centers, right?
He's a great, like, the defensive center is still key though.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure he would have gotten 70.
People, I think it's really underestimated defense too. We both think the Pacers win.
Yeah, I'm, yes, we do. And now we're in our end of rambling thoughts part.
This always happens.
But you need to.
These are always the best.
I know, but we got on with an hour.
People love these ones where we just go off the rails. This has been a long one too.
Yeah. Is there anything you want off the rails before we finish up? You have any random topic you want to talk about the Pacers?
I will drop in a stat if I can find it really fast, but there is a chance I cannot find it really fast.
What's yes, it related
here
it to?
Is. Yes, here it is. Ready. Thaddeus Young on the floor with four bench players. Ready? 132.4 yeah. Offensive rating, 72.2 defensive rating, plus 60.2 net rating in 35 possessions. That unit was great.
I think that's the smartest thing we've done minutes-wise or like rotation-wise is done.
The group.
Because you bring Sabonis in and you kill it. And
It was Kojo, Tyreek, McD, Thad, and Sabonis, and it was great.
They only ran that one game, right?
Yes, they did. That was the
first game.
Grizzlies game.
So I'd like to see them run that more. I mean, I think that was a really good idea.
It was.
But Turner's going to set a foul trouble. They're going to do that.
No, Turner did not had plenty of fouls that game. They did it because Leaf got hurt and he stepped in just fine.
Did they? I thought it's because they brought Sabonis in at the 4 minute mark and took Thad out and then brought him back into play.
No, they went Sabonis Turner first that game, remember? And then they went to Thad in the bench.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what but Turner has got to make the first quarter for them to be able to do that.
He played almost the entire first quarter of that game.
No, I mean in the future for future games.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, TBD. Especially Leaf could come back and then it doesn't matter at all.
Yeah, that's a good stat. I hope they run that more, to be honest. And I hope we see less of the O'Quinn Sabonis lineups.
Oh, I hate that. Yeah. I agree.
That was really weird and confusing. And I just don't know what they did, to be honest. I don't understand it. They put in 11 minutes, which makes no sense because they had all their, I mean, I guess he tried to place a bonus less minutes, but to put them together, that made no sense. I'm just confused, to be honest. Just confused. What are you writing this week?
A lot of stuff. Something about Tyreek and his varying paces. And I don't know. I'll probably avoid the Turner Sabonis stuff, but I'll figure some stuff out. It'll be fun.
All right. You're going to be doing tomorrow's podcast, right?
I will be previewing the Spurs game. Yes. 3 days in a row, my pleasant voice for y'all.
Then you get me the rest of the week to do all kinds of stuff. And I'm Turner better play better on Wednesday. Otherwise, it's going to be a long, long
I'm going to be on the show. I'm going to be on the show if he doesn't play well. I got to save y'all from Adam.
No, I'll be in a better mood. I think I'm getting kind of tired at the end of the night. And I like planned my whole day around watching the Pacer game. And I had a long day at work. Like, I'm going to watch this game. It's going to be good. I'm ready for a close game. And it was that way for three quarters. And every time I kind of watching him, like, I'm just yelling at TV, like, what are you doing, Turner? What are you doing here? What are you doing there? It doesn't make any sense.
It is what it is. I got nothing else.
Yeah. I am good. As always, you can follow us at Locked On Pacers. You can follow Tony at TeasedNBA, me at FreeMadam5. That's it for his Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.